prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to a new week here at the Superhuman Nation. We are going to start the week off with two great interviews during the first hour. We're going to be joined by Dr. Jonathan Bonnet to talk about a paper that he was involved with authoring called Rethinking Obesity Counseling, having the French fry discussion. And then during the second hour, we're going to be joined all the way, I believe, from Tasmania, University of Tasmania, Dr. Jason Harlack, which I think it's midnight there. So by the time we get him on the air, it's going to be a couple hours in the morning there. We're going to talk about probiotics, prebiotics, and symbiotics, and a lot more discussions on gut dysbiosis. That's going to be also a good interview. You'll want to stick around for that one as well. But let's get started right away with Dr. Jonathan Bonnet. How you doing, Dr. Bonnet?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Okay, so let's talk about the paper, first of all, and then we'll get into a lot of the details of the paper. This paper was published in October originally, right? Around October 23rd, I believe.
Yep, in the Journal of Obesity. That's correct.
Okay. And the paper sought to look at the childhood obesity issues and where the role of the personal care provider, physician or clinician, comes into the equation, right?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. Our paper tried to look at primary care providers, and it actually looked at the perceptions of the providers as well as what they were actually saying they were doing in practice.
Okay, so talk about how the design, the study design, and what you learned, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So we took 11 different primary care practices in the Duke family or the Duke University Health System network, and then we went around to these various practices and we tried to get input from all the different providers there. So this included physicians, both MDs and DO physicians, physicians assistants, nurse practitioners, as well as residents who are in training. And we sought out to assess not only what their perceived barriers in preventing and treating obesity in children, but then also what they reported that they actually did during a set number of visits, which are well child checks, which for those of you who may not be as familiar with the medical system, the way it normally works is that when a child is born, they have a newborn visit with their primary care provider, and then at set intervals, there's a follow-up visit. And so at the 1 month, the 2 month, 4 month, 6 month, 9 month, 12 month, 15, 18, and then it's yearly thereafter.
So what kind of questions did you ask? First of all, out of 11 practices, how many actual clinicians and physicians did you have in this group?
Yeah, so in total, we had about 70 or so people that could have potentially answered the questions for us, and we ended up having about 50 or so that ended up completing the survey.
Well, that's pretty good. Okay, so what kind of questions did you ask on the survey?
So one of the things was just getting general demographic and information on the survey. So that was the first set of questions we asked. And then the second set was, again, what do you perceive as barriers of treating obesity? And so we did it on a Likert scale, which you do on a 1 through 5 scale of how important do you think this behavior is pertaining to preventing and treating obesity. So there's a whole slew of questions that ask everything from the family perspective to children's motivation to how much screen time, physical activity, diet, or even from the provider's perspective, feeling frustrated or having issues or problems with having past patients that they've failed in treating their obesity for. And so that was the second part, was then getting their perceptions of the perceived barriers. And then the last part said, so we took out all the visits that children come for their well child checks, and we said, at which visits do you discuss these particular topics? And so the range of things included things like juice, cereals, candy, fast food, screen time, physical activity, sleep, et cetera. And so then we got a tally of what visits providers actually had these discussions with.
Okay,
people.
Now I want to back up just for a second. The demographics were on the participants being surveyed, not their patients, correct?
Yes, yeah, so this was all a provider perspective.
How many, what was the demographic range like? Can you give us a snapshot of that, of the providers?
Of the actual, like, ages and things?
Well, ages, genders, and anything else that you collected that would you felt would be meaningful in extrapolating this data.
Sure. So, and in terms of the demographics that the survey included, there were about 40 or so family physicians, 8 physician's assistants, 7 nurse practitioners. And of those, about 55% were women. And then there was a range from the ages. Anywhere about a third were the 40 to 50 or so. About 5% were in their 20s. And then the other range was kind of distributed equally among the 30s to 40s, and then only about 10% after the 50-plus.
Now, before we get into the information that they answered on the survey about their patients, can you tell us anything about their perceptions of their own? Or did you analyze them for obesity, overweight, or any of these kind of situations that we were then going to say, are you talking to your patients about these things?
And so that was so to answer your question, we did look at, part of the questionnaire was asking the physicians to put their height and weight and BMI down.
Mm-hmm.
And also whether they perceived that themselves were overweight or obese.
What percentage of them perceived themselves as being overweight and or obese?
So in terms of the physician responses, they actually were pretty good at making sure, or at least understanding that they were overweight or obese.
Mm-hmm.
About a third of our primary care physicians were overweight, and less than 1% were obese.
Okay. Now, you said of the physicians, so the physician's assistants and the nurse practitioners, they were not as well at assessing their own situation?
The data that we looked at was just an aggregate, so we didn't break it down by the different subtypes across the board.
Okay.
But again, 33% of the primary care physicians were overweight, and 30% indicated that they thought they were overweight. 0.6 were obese, and 2% of them believed that they were obese. So the numbers correlated pretty well, and that was across not only physicians but the PAs and the NPs.
Okay.
Too.
Excellent. And was there an age stack up? Were the older physicians and clinicians more likely to be in that 33% that saw themselves as overweight or possibly obese?
We didn't actually do a thorough analysis of the different weight breakdowns. That actually could probably be a whole separate paper.
Yeah,
in terms of just trying to break that down, because we were trying to really focus more on the obesity treatment of the patients and what we were doing for children that were visiting the office, rather than trying to discern, are physicians truly aware of their own health and risks?
Well, and the reason I ask this is because it's probably going to come out later on in the discussion anyway. But people are quite often reluctant to have discussions with other people in a position of being a counselor when they're trying to counsel someone for some potential problem that they themselves have not taken steps to correct in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if I'm an avid drug user and I'm a parent, I have a very difficult time sitting down with my son and looking him in the eyes and going, you should not do drugs, because I know that he knows that I'm doing drugs, number one, so I'm being a hypocrite. And number two, it's not going to be a wholehearted discussion, because my son is going to look at me and think, well, if you feel that way, why don't you stop doing drugs? So and that's why I'm trying to ascertain where the clinicians fell into the realm of obesity, and I'm sure you guys have had that same thought, right? I mean, you have to. That's a glaring fact, right?
I think you make some really great points about obesity in general, and particularly the nature of do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think probably as a medical community, even myself, I'm guilty of saying the things that are healthy and should be done, but then also having difficulty and challenging doing those things on my own end.
Yes. And actually, that creates a greater sensitivity for the plight of the person that you're trying to counsel, quite frankly. But I also see that as an opportunity for physicians. And I have to tell you, I see that as an opportunity for physicians and clinicians to embrace their own journey and and actually become better leaders. We know that people who struggle with their weight and then seem to do whatever it takes to correct this problem, that we hold them up on a pedestal because we know this is no small feat. And it's easier to be motivated by those kind of people. And so I think there's a real opportunity in those people. I wish those physicians and clinicians would embrace their journey, recognize that they're losing that fight too, that they need to correct it for themselves, because I believe that they would be great, better leaders for the young children that they're working with. But that's a whole different issue. And obviously that's not something we can test with a study, without doing some very, very long-term work. So let's talk about the perceived barriers, or the barriers that these clinicians, talked about that they faced with the children that they counseled. What were they, 1 through 5?
So the top 5 barriers that in our study that were most highly ranked by the primary care providers, the first one was families not getting enough exercise. And then the other 4 included families watching too much TV, families eating fast food too often, the child is not motivated to change their lifestyle, or the parent is not motivated to change their lifestyle. And
right.
Those are the top 5.
Right. And here we have, you know, and this is why, when I first read the paper, I thought, quite frankly, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I have raised 3 children, I thought that why is the responsibility for this being foisted on the PCPs? Why the parents are the ones that should be counseling their children on healthy lifestyle strategies and so on. You can't do it during well visits, because you're going to say something to the kid, and the kid may even buy into it for a moment. But we know that children's attention span is fleeting, and unless the parents go home and they indoctrinate these changes into the lifestyle, because they are providing this lifestyle, the children are not on their own, the children have to do whatever the parent does, the parents really own the responsibility for changing these children's lives. And I have to believe, without exception, that any child who is suffering from being overweight or even moderately obese probably has parents that are suffering from being overweight or moderately obese. Would you agree with that statement?
I definitely would agree that certainly behaviors and trends and even genetic predispositions to obesity certainly run in families. I think one of the interesting points you mentioned, in our study, although we took data from all the well-child checks up until 18 years old, we tried to focus on the early well-child checks, so really the under the age of 2. And so this is at a stage when children aren't making any decisions for the most part.
Right.
You know, they're basically subsequent to any decisions that the parents decide to make in terms of diet, physical activity, the environment that they're surrounded by. And so as a family physician, they are kind of ideally poised, because not only do they take care of kids like pediatricians do, but they also take care of the whole family. So it's often been noted that it's cradle to the grave.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to see a child when they're just born, and then I also get to see folks who are, you know, in some of their last days. And so you get that whole continuity.
Right.
But you also have relationships with other family members. So you have the parents, the families, the siblings, all together. So I think you're completely right in the sense that it's a bigger problem than just talking to a kid about it.
Right.
But a parent is going to be bringing the child to the visits. And so most of these discussions, certainly within the first 2 years, and even this idea of the French fry discussion, would be something that would primarily be involved with the parents, with the patient and the child there, but obviously probably not conversing a whole lot.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to delve deeper into this discussion. We're talking right now with Dr. Jonathan Bonnet. We're talking about rethinking obesity counseling, having the French fry discussion. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
For the best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing, and effective strength training, muscle-building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to brookscubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer ebooks, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to brookscubic.com right now.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out getds.com.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N Labs.com.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. Papa Vince has only 26 bottles of organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil from the rare olives from Sicily, the Nocella di Balice olives that have one-of-a-kind flavor. Everybody who tries them says this is the best olive oil they've ever tasted. You can get 2 bottles for $39.95 as a special offer for Superhuman Radio listeners. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Papa Vince banner ad today. 26 bottles left. That's 13 superhumans who can still get 2 bottles. Then there's no more until the new olive oil comes from Sicily in February. So you don't want to be without it. If you have some now, don't run out. My guest is Dr. Jonathan Bonnet. We're talking about counseling for childhood obesity, and we were discussing how the private care practitioners, the doctors and the PAs and so on are responsible for conveying some of these messages to the children and the families. And so, obviously, activity and exercise is a primary driver here in the obesogenic model. We just don't get enough activity. In fact, there's enough evidence now coming from some real good institutions that have done some very, very good research showing that inactivity may be the largest contributor to all-cause mortality today, more so than even the diet. In fact, I hate to say this because I'm such a stickler about eating an ancestral diet and sourcing locally sourced foods and so on, that exercise may mitigate a lot of the damning effects of even a moderately bad diet. So couldn't it be within, or shouldn't it be within the wheelhouse of the physician to be able to prescribe exercise, Dr. Bonnet?
You make some really good points about the idea of obesity being a multifactorial thing, not only including things like diet, but also exercise, and I probably even throw in sleep and stress management as other potential contributors to the whole phenomenon. And I think you're right, too. Prescribing exercise is actually one of my other passions. The American College of Sports Medicine actually has a whole initiative in a subforce called Exercise is Medicine. And so you literally get prescriptions for exercise. They measure exercise as a vital sign out in the Kaiser Health System. And so every time you come to your visit, you get your blood pressure, your heart rate, your temperature checked, and they ask you how many minutes a week do you exercise. So the idea of really putting that as a pivotal thing that is critically important to health and well-being.
But so are doctors capable of saying to a parent, I'm prescribing an hour of exercise a day for your child. You can sign them up for soccer. You can take them into the park. You can do whatever you want. But this prescription needs to be followed, just like compliance of a drug that I would prescribe.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely that physicians are certainly capable of doing it. It's one, getting the word and the message of this is what something we feel very strongly about doing, and then also making sure the prescription gets filled. Even just across all the normal prescriptions, there's about 20-30% of medicines that never get filled in general for any medicine or ailment.
Prescription,
and
right.
We're throwing another prescription that may or may not be taken seriously.
Yeah, no, you're right. And actually, one of the big beefs that most physicians have is that, you know, patient compliance when it comes to just taking their meds, which is just taking a pill or some pills, where, you know, exercising clearly is quite a bit more heroic in the average person's eyes than just walking over to a counter, taking a pill and washing it down with water. So, you did mention something that did not appear on the list of the top five, but clearly probably falls into screen time maybe for children, and that is sleep. Children are probably today are probably the most sleep deprived of any generation before, because of first of all, we know that blue light impedes melatonin. We know that melatonin is the highest in the first decade of life, and that when it starts to drop is when puberty comes in. We see more and more precocious puberty in children today, which some out there think is because of the improper sleep that they are seeing. Children are staying up later, getting up earlier. They have more duties at school than they have extracurricular activities after school. What about the contribution of the high stress lifestyle with not enough sleep that is maybe damning children to almost an instantaneous insulin resistant environment?
And you make some other really good points about other contributors to obesity. Sleep is, I think, probably, in my personal opinion, one of the most underrated and undervalued approaches for health and wellness. It's just something that most people just have to do. So after everything else gets done, then I go to sleep, versus saying sleep is a critically important piece of my life. And we know that sleep regulates everything from hormone levels to ghrelin to leptin, which control your hunger. It also decreases your stress. It can lower your blood pressure. And you also get predisposed to being more insulin resistant, to putting on weight, to having higher blood pressure if you don't get enough sleep. And as a country, and probably as a nation, and maybe even as a world, we definitely get less sleep than we should. And I think because of the chronic stresses and things that people deal with in society, and certainly the 24/7 tech era has not helped that, people are playing with their iPhones in bed, they're texting, they're on their iPads, surfing the net, watching TV. There is 24/7 entertainment all the time, and so really making a concerted effort to prioritize sleep is something I think is really challenging because, again, you sleep a third of your life, and so that's a big portion of time that you're allocating to something that many people don't necessarily understand the ramifications of not getting it.
Yeah, they don't see a value of it. So not getting enough exercise, fast food, the parent is not motivated to change diet and lifestyle. The family's watched too much TV, as a family, obviously, and then the child is not motivated to change their lifestyle. Fast food, fast food is like cigarette smoking to me. I still can't believe that there are people who start smoking cigarettes. I'm flabbergasted by it. When I was out in San Diego one time, my son and his friend were sitting on their porch, the house that they rent in San Diego, and the friend was smoking a cigarette. And instead of saying to him, why do you still smoke? I said, let me ask you a question. If that house across the street was for sale at a bargain price, but it was covered with lead and asbestos and you were guaranteed to get lung cancer or some other disease if you lived in it for 10 years, but the only way they'd sell it to you for this bargain price is if you had to live in it for 10 years, would you buy it? And the kid didn't even hesitate. Of course not. He goes, that's stupid. I said, so why are you smoking cigarettes? That's the same scenario. It's just you're not buying the house. You're buying the pack of cigarettes day in and day out, and you're guaranteed to get a disease. Mm-hmm. And But fast food falls into that gamut for me as well. I still can't believe families take their children to McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
What's the discussion that a PCP has with the parents about that?
And so this was regarding the discussion of fast food with children. One of the challenges that we face as a society is, again, a lot of these things that are now available weren't necessarily available 15, 20 years ago. And so there's been a whole new slew of different things like energy drinks, all the fast food, all the highly processed foods that we now have available, and all the genetically modified things and otherwise.
Bingo.
And so we have guidelines that exist for general nutrition discussion. And again, this was part of the study that we had looked at, was also, again, general guidelines exist, but they're not very specific or concrete. And so this is why we took the data that we had of saying it looks like primary care providers know that fast food is a problem, but then when we look at when they're discussing it, the majority of providers are not discussing it in the first year of life at all, and it's not actually till the second well-child check that the majority of the providers, 68%, actually discuss fast food with them. And the other interesting part of this is that we know from prior research that there's a profound shift in the dietary habits of kids. The first 6 months, we traditionally advocate for breastfeeding, and then foods are slowly introduced. But from 9 to 11 months, French fries are the third most consumed vegetable when kids are 9 to 11 months old.
That's
and
hilarious.
Then by the 15 to 18 month age, it's the most commonly consumed vegetable. And so as primary care providers, if we're starting to talk to them at 2 years, we've already missed when that's already become their number one vegetable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The habit is already set. Okay, I want to take a break. When we come back, I want you to tell us what how often the primary care physicians were actually having these discussions with children, what percentages of them were doing so, and the ones that weren't, what the reasoning was why they weren't. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic, raw, EVOO, for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935. Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now, you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended it.
Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date. Now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex is finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use superhuman curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need metacurcumin. Human by Rev Genetics today.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. You want to stick around for the second hour? We're going to talk about gut issues. Do you have any? Nexium is the number 2 prescribed drug of 2013. It used to be number 3. I predict in the next year or two it'll be the number 1 drug. Right now we're talking with Dr. Jonathan Bonnet. We're talking about how your primary care physician can actually influence your child's potential to become obese, and maybe the whole family. I like that idea. It's a family thing. Forget about the village. It's just inside your hut that you have to focus on. So what were the reasons? Well, first of all, how many of these physicians that were surveyed, these 50 physicians, actually physicians and their clinicians, actually spoke to the children and the parents about this stuff?
Regarding fast foods, it kind of varied. Again, no physicians started to talk about it until at least 4 months, which is really the first time that any of the recommendations even suggest trying to start adding new foods in.
Right.
So it was actually an appropriate thing on the physician's end. And again, it slowly kind of increases, but like I said, the majority of physicians are not actually speaking to their patients about fast foods up until the 2-year visit is the first time where the majority of providers actually discuss fast foods. And interestingly, along with the fast foods was also the notion of physical activity. And in the whole first year of life, only 23% of physicians at best discuss physical activity with the kids. And again, the first visit is then at the 2-year when the majority of providers actually sit down and discuss physical activity.
This is why I would have loved to have seen this question in the demographics, and maybe it's there. How many of you eat fast food? how many of you exercise 30 minutes a day? Because I find that it's really hard to deliver the message when you really don't or like half-heartedly believe it. You know, it's like I have a feeling that there's a lot of physicians out there who say, look, you know, a McDonald's cheeseburger and fries, it's not going to kill you. You know, we're not telling people to eat it all day long. But, you know, one a day for 5 days a week, it's not going to kill you. And while that may be true, the problem is that that's not where people stop. They don't just stop there. And I would wonder how many of the physicians eat fast food with any regularity and how many of the physicians exercise with any regularity. Because I have a feeling that there's going to be a lineup of the ones who believe in these things because they use these strategies themselves, and then they convey it to their patients.
Yeah, and I actually tend to agree with you for the most part. I think as physicians, although we are aware of many of the guidelines, and as you and many of your listeners know, knowledge is not power. Knowledge is necessary, but there are still other factors, motivation, desire, they go into being able to use the information that you have in a way that is able to help your health and to help you as a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what were the reasons behind why the PCPs were not having these discussions?
In our study, we didn't particularly try to discern out why or why they weren't having it. The thing we looked at was what guidelines currently existed. And we tried to look and see, well, are they kind of following the guidelines or not? And the challenge with that is that the guidelines, again, are kind of vague, which, again, leads to a problem of, well, are they doing it right? Are they doing it wrong? For the most part, they seem to kind of be following them. Although, again, if you look at the guidelines, because they're so generic, as an example of the guidelines, you know, there's not even a mention of fruit and vegetables until about the five-year visit. And in the first, you know, 12 months, it says, you know, and this is verbatim, advise nutrition and healthy snacks. And so, again, they don't mention any nutrition at 15 or 18 months with the guidelines. And then the 5 years is when they actually start talking about fruit and vegetables specifically, again, other than not breastfeeding. So the challenge is because the guidelines were created to give physicians flexibility to focus on the unique needs of patients and things, there's not dedicated discussion times for certain things like fast food per se. And so what our study kind of we tried to get at the end was, well, maybe it's worthwhile actually scheduling a fast food or a what we called a French fry discussion at the 12-month visit to really give physicians an opportunity and also a reason to have this discussion.
What does that discussion sound like? I mean, in the Reader's Digest version of it.
So I think rather than just being a purely didactic discussion about French fries, it would move beyond that and it would work towards a motivational interviewing approach to try and get a sense of what's important to the family, what sorts of things do they eat, what's their typical routine, regimen, et cetera. Because, again, this is something that's primarily going to be controlled by the family unit and the parents and the environment that the kids are placed in. And so it's really understanding what drives them and making them appreciate the importance of being an appropriate weight and giving their children and even themselves nutritious foods, making sure they're physically active. Because this is not just a pediatric problem. This is a societal, cultural,
right,
nationwide problem.
And obviously, if we can kind of nip it in the bud, so to speak, when the child is young, where a lot of these habits are learned and have their most profound effect moving forward, it's an ideal opportunity.
Yeah, and I think the challenge is with that, we know that overweight five-year-olds are four times as likely to become obese as someone who's normal. And so once you start out on a bad footing, it's real easy to continue down that road. And again, like you had mentioned previously, a lot of the lifestyle habits and behaviors that we have get ingrained relatively early. And a lot of kids will even mimic and do the things that their parents do. And so rather than just saying, you shouldn't eat that or you can't eat that, it's this is how I eat, this is how I live my life. And just modeling the behavior is a very powerful thing for kids and even other people to see.
This show's been on the air for almost 10 years now. And over that period of time, we've had someone come on the show talking about some topic where a dietary approach was linked to either resolving a disease and therefore implicated in the etiology and development of that disease. And whenever the medical orthodoxy was discussed, somebody would say, well, what do you want? Physicians get no training in school about diet. And at the end, they get one small semester or two semesters of nutrition, but it's nothing about how food influences diseases or how food influences obesity. It's about, you know, macronutrients, micronutrients, like, you know, dietary standards 101. Mm-hmm. Is there any truth to that? And is that part of the problem? Is part of the problem that physicians need to be taught in school the importance of dietary regimens and their influence on obesity and therefore disease?
There are a number of things I think that you said that I completely align with and can also relate to. I think the first thing that you had mentioned about just training in this idea of what I would call lifestyle medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in medical school, I got, I think, 4 hours in total of dedicated nutrition lecturing, and that was all primarily biochemistry and specific genetic defects of enzyme pathways. And so, again, lifestyle is usually mentioned, but even a talk on hypertension, there's a slide and usually one bullet at the top that says, lifestyle changes, you know, eat better, less salt, exercise more, and then there's another 30 slides about the medical management of hypertension. So, again, I think we are quickly to go beyond lifestyle medicine, which I think is something that we can absolutely work on, not only as a medical society, but also just as a culture. And I think one of the things that's going on that I'm actively involved with trying to help change this is something called the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine that's up at Boston. And they're working on a whole medical curricula shift to really implement lifestyle medicine teaching within medical schools. But then furthering just going beyond medical education is something I'm on the board of, is the American College of Lifestyle Medicine.
Mm.
And the purpose of that whole thing is to not only focus on diet, exercise, sleep, but also stress, relationships, and not only use lifestyle in medicine, but then lifestyle as medicine.
Right. Right.
And so not only are you prescribing it as a preventative approach, but then also using it for people who already have certain diseases and things, using it to treat that.
We're going to take our last commercial break. We'll wrap up the discussion on the other side. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Jonathan Bonnet.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, LivonLabs.com.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Bonnet about how personal care physicians, primary care physicians, should be having these discussions with children and their parents sooner as opposed to later. And I'm going to give you a chance to summarize what you hope clinicians take away from your research. But I want to mention something first. Because you're really, when you talk about lifestyle is medicine. It's something that we've discovered on this show, and we have tried our best to disseminate that information to people who feel like they're lost. Maybe they're not getting what they need from their from the medical orthodoxy in results or in response to a disease, and they feel like they have no hope. That lifestyle is always something you can change, and usually get some response from. Dr. Dale Bredesen was on the show end of November, around the 27th, 28th, I believe. He is a UCLA physician and researcher, and he also worked in conjunction with the Buck Institute there. For the past 25 years, he has spent his entire career researching Alzheimer's disease to try to discover the single molecule that is at the root of the cause of Alzheimer's disease. And after 25 years, he has actually had a small group. He just published a paper. He had a small trial of 10 individuals, and now they're doing a larger trial as a result. But he successfully completely reversed memory loss associated with Alzheimer's disease in 10 individuals. So much so that one guy was retiring because his Alzheimer's had gotten so bad, and after the trial that he participated in, he has now opened two new offices, and he's going great guns again and feels fantastic. Now, when you tell this to people, they expect you to tell them about a drug, Aricept or something. You know, oh, well, it was this plaque or this or that. And all those things are involved in the disease, but they are byproducts of the disease. They're like exhaust coming out of a car. The exhaust doesn't move the car through space. There are other things taking place, and the exhaust is just corollary or consequence of the car running. And so what he discovered was these things reverse Alzheimer's disease. And it's exactly what you're talking about, Dr. Bennett. It's talking about lifestyle as medicine. Eliminating all simple carbohydrates, gluten, and processed foods from the diet, and eating more organic vegetables, fruits, and non-farm fish. I applaud him for putting the word vegetables in front of fruit. That's been a big pet peeve of mine. We always say eat more fruits and vegetables. It should be the other way around. Eat lots more vegetables and some fruits. But okay. Meditation twice a day and beginning yoga to reduce stress. Sleeping 7 to 8 hours per night. And he talked about how this is very difficult and you may have to take steps like melatonin, pre-bed meditation and so on, but you must get your sleep straight. And here, taking melatonin, methylcobalamin, vitamin D3, fish oil, and coenzyme Q10 each day. Optimizing oral hygiene using an electrical flosser and electric toothbrush. Reinstating youthful hormone levels using hormone replacement therapy. Fasting for a minimum of 12 hours between dinner and breakfast and for a minimum of 3 hours between dinner and bedtime. Exercising for a minimum of 30 minutes, 4 to 6 days per week. This is all he did, Dr. Bennett. He did these things to 10 people and their brain came back. Their memory was clear. They were able to function. And as long as they live this lifestyle, they're probably going to continue to reverse whatever accumulation of metabolic debris occurred in their brain and stave off this disease. Isn't that a miracle?
Yeah, so I think lifestyle and medicine certainly has the incredible power that I think we're just starting to understand and appreciate. And just one of the best studies that was really done with this was something called the EPIC Potsdam study, which was done with 23,000 Germans in 2009. And it basically found that if you followed all four of these lifestyle factors, which included not smoking, having a BMI less than 30, exercising about 3.5 hours a week, and eating a healthy diet, which is, again, primarily vegetables, fruits, then you actually had it almost 80% with 78% reduction in developing chronic disease. So this was diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, if you did all those. So 80% is a powerful, powerful number.
Okay, so what would you like clinicians to take away from this research? Because obviously, I'm going to ask you to summarize a little bit that end users too, but what would you like clinicians to take away from your research?
I think from our study particular, since it focused more on childhood obesity, we know that obesity in general is a rampant problem throughout all of society. And our specific study, again, focused on the early ages. But I think because we know we're getting bigger as a country, bigger as a nation, I think earlier intervention and intentional intervention is warranted and needed. And so, again, we've identified some areas where certainly fast food, but certainly even these other topics like exercise, sleep, I don't think there's an early enough time we can start to bring those topics up because it's not just relevant for a one-month-old, but it's relevant for the whole family. And so we can use these already built-in well-child visits to have a touch point to discuss these important critical issues. And so I think the idea of having a purposeful discussion, whether it be a French fry discussion or fast talk or fast food talk, whatever you want to call it or term it, I think we need to have a dedicated approach to really make sure that we're addressing this issue, and not only in our young patients, but all patients in general.
What would you say to the parents of young patients whose doctors may not be having this discussion with them and their children?
I think as a medical society, we have an obligation to treat the overall health and wellness of our patients. And again, there's clear evidence that lifestyle medicine works. And I think in addition to just the medical providers, though, it's also on the onus of the patients, the families, and the people themselves to have the motivation, determination, and to want to take their health into their own hands and to have this. So even if you're not having that discussion with the provider, one, you can ask them questions, and they will be happy to answer the whatever things that are on your mind, but also to have the onus on yourself to take matters into your own hands because, again, we're going to have these visits for at clinics to see the patients, but then, again, you know, 23.5 hours of the day is yours, and
right.
You're going to be making all those decisions yourself.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't know what to say to a person to motivate them to change their lifestyle. That's the $64 billion question. For some people, it takes a life-threatening event. Some people, it takes a few life-threatening events where they finally go, okay, I'm going to change this, you know, high-risk behavior. I'm going to start to get more exercise. But I just don't know what it's going to take to get the majority of people to say, I'm gonna start changing my lifestyle because I, A, want to be healthier and live a longer and stronger life, and B, I don't want to be a burden to my family someday.
Yeah, and I think it's almost a two-pronged question, because I think one part of it is making the default choice the healthy choice. And so rather than having all these bad choices and you having to work really hard to make a healthy decision, make it all healthy choices, so you have to work really hard to make a bad decision. Because again, if you take the power of society and of culture, it's a much easier route in a battle to fight than if it is to say, this is one person going to go on a diet and going to have to navigate this really complex, treacherous path alone. And then I think the flip side of that is also then finding the motivation within the person themselves is the second part. And again, everyone's motivation is a little bit different. For some people, it's about being able to play with their grandchildren. Some people just want to be fit and active and healthy. And some people have other obligations. They want to look good, or there's some vanity, or whatever. They have a wedding coming up, whatever it may be. But I think individualizing the motivation to the person, but then also working at a societal level and a cultural level to say, hey, we value and appreciate health, and make it so that the healthy decisions are the default choices.
Dr. Bonnet, I want to thank you for making time to come on the show. This is a really important discussion, because if we can get this right now, there are children out there who will die before their parents will die. There are children out there who will develop diseases that at one time were only seen in an aging population. And we have to start there. We have to start with children. Dr. Daniel Lieberman came on my show and said that we are in a process of de-evolution right now. And it has to change. And it starts with our children. We have to save our kids. If you can't save yourself, save your kids. If you're a mom or dad out there and you're struggling with your own weight, then you need to make lifestyle changes for your children, because they're going to model you. Do it for them. And they will then end up picking up the baton and running with it as well. But it has to be done, because we're not going to be able to get very far at the rate that we're going right now. Dr. Bonnet, thanks for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure. I wanted to thank you and your listeners for having me.
Take care.
You too.
All right, so stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be on with Dr. Jason Harlack, and we're going to talk about the gut. Lots of good things about the gut. Probiotics, prebiotics, and symbiotics. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Anabolicminds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit anabolicminds.com today and get into the action. Anabolicminds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
For the best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing, and effective strength training, muscle-building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to brookscubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer ebooks, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to brookscubic.com right now.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use superhuman curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need metacurcumin. Human by Rev Genetics today.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. Okay, this is a really, really important discussion now. We're being joined by Dr. Jason Harlack. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, that's right. It's a Ukrainian name, so it's not that easy to say for anyone who's not Ukrainian, but that was a good guess.
Yeah, there you go. He's gracious enough to be up at near 5 a.m. in the morning. He is with the University of Tasmania School of Medicine, and so that's the opposite side of the globe from us. Thank you for being here today, by the way.
Ah, you're welcome, and thanks for the invite as well.
So we're going to talk about the gut. We're going to talk about probiotics, prebiotics, and symbiotics, but we're going to get a little deeper into dysbiosis and even some issues about gut disorders because, number one, the President of the United States was just diagnosed with GERD. For those of you who aren't watching the news, President Obama has been diagnosed clinically with acid reflux disorder. Number two, Nexium just bumped up one more slot. It is now the number two prescribed drug in the world as of 2013. And it's just $200 million below the number one prescribed drug, which is Abilify, which is a drug given for a variety of neurological and depression and so on and so forth reasons. I predict in the next couple of years, Nexium will be the number one drug, probably topping $7 billion a year in sales. That's a lot of money, $7 billion a year, one pill. And there's a reason for that. Everybody I know has a gut issue. And guess what? I developed one not too long ago. Didn't talk about it on the air, but I've resolved it on my own, and it's going to play right into this discussion today. So let's start off with this part first, please, Dr. Harlack. The probiotics are really, really popular right now, and
yeah.
But do they have a real value, first of all?
Oh, I think they have substantial value, and I'm also a clinician as well, and have been for 15 years, and I specialize in gut disorders as well, and they're a huge part of my practice, but I think it must be differentiated here that there are, in terms of what's on the market, very good quality probiotics, and then there are not good quality probiotics to fit nicely. And if you're using ones that aren't very good, you're...
Uh-oh. Dr. Harlack, can you hear me? Dr. Harlack? That's not good. Okay, here's We're going to go ahead and continue to play some music here for a second, and I'll make sure I get him back on the phone. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. That's why I love live radio. No one else likes to do live radio because it's exciting and anything can happen. We've got Dr. Harlack back on the line. Okay. All right. So you were saying that some of the probiotics are not necessarily very good. One of the things I was curious about, I have this theory about probiotics, right? If you were to take a handful of grass seeds and throw them on a football field, you'd have zero impact. Shouldn't we be taking 500 billion, a trillion? I take one by a company called a product called VSL. That's 450 billion per sachet. I take two of those a night. Isn't part of the problem the minuscule amounts of probiotics people are taking?
I don't think that's actually the biggest problem. I think it's the quality of the strains that are contained in the supplements. And VSL number 3 is actually a very, very good supplement that's well researched, but you'll find that many of the ones on the market are not. And it really comes down to whether the strains in a particular supplement have the basic criteria needed to enable them to have a therapeutic effect. So the strain should have gastric acid stability so it can survive transit to the stomach. They should have bile salt stability so they can deal with the bile that's in that first bit of the small bowel. They should be able to attach to your intestinal cells. They should be able to interact with your immune system. They should be able to at least temporarily colonize your gut. Hopefully they can produce antimicrobial compounds that can have a selective action in your gut, so they can reduce numbers of potential pathogens and hopefully have no impact on your beneficial bacteria. They can sort of compete with food and for special sort of parking places with pathogenic bacteria. And then they should have clinical trials showing that they work, because I think when you look at that sort of criteria level, there's actually only a handful of probiotic products on the market that contain bacteria that have those given qualities. And I think that's the key thing. And those probiotic strains actually work at quite low doses. Like you can use 10 to the 9 bacteria to a billion bugs per dose and get good clinical efficacy with those strains. But if you're and I think part of the issue here is that if a company is wanting to make a probiotic supplement, they've got a wide range of choices as to who supplies their ingredients, and they can pay for those strains that have got those really well characterized, all those great characteristics that are needed, and they pay a lot more for those than they do from El Cheapo brand from China that they can get.
Oh man, it looks like we're gonna have a problem with him tonight. Are you gone again? Sit tight. I'm very sorry about this. Sit tight. Okay, we're back. Okay. So I get it. So basically, if they're buying some of these cheaper brands of probiotics to start with, we're not going to see the kind of results that we're looking for, right?
Yeah, and it's essentially a decision that a manufacturer makes, is they can go with well-characterized, well-researched strains, or they can go with ones that aren't. And the ones that don't have the research on showing that they do anything are obviously far cheaper. So some companies will just use those. And sometimes they can use much higher CFUs, so higher counts per dose, but it doesn't mean that they actually do anything. I think that's the key thing, is people making the assumption that because it says Lactobacillus or Acidophilus or Bifidobacterium bifidum on the label, that it means that it has therapeutic effects. And what we know now quite conclusively from the research is that therapeutic efficacy is not species specific, so there are strains within species, and that determines whether they're actually effective or not.
What about the emerging research about the different effects of Bacteroidetes and Firmicutes on things like obesity and insulin resistance, and the fact that we now even understand that gut microbes may wax and wane throughout the day. There may be appropriate times to supplement with a particular, like it appears that there may be even timing now of when to take a dose of a probiotic.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting new research, and I think the molecular method that we now use to assess the gut microbiota has really changed our world in terms of how we view things, and we're learning so much every single year that the knowledge base is changing dramatically in this sphere because of the new technology we have to actually assess changes, and we can start seeing these relatively smaller shifts that were impossible to note before when all we could do was culture stool bugs. And when all we could do was culture, we essentially didn't think there were any differences with your gut flora, irrespective of what you ate. And we now know it's actually a huge difference in terms of, and we know there's other differences like you just highlighted there too, in terms of waxing and waning throughout the day too. So I think we'll see that this area is growing more, and we'll find out more about what the ideal time is. I mean, some basics in terms of taking a probiotic supplement, that if you take it with food or immediately following a bigger meal, you get better bacterial survival than when you take it on an empty stomach. So we've known that for maybe the last decade or so, but even though the information hasn't necessarily filtrated out into individual practices, but I think you're right. Yeah, that we'll actually learn more and find genomic discovery more.
So it is better to take them with a large meal.
Yeah, that's right. That's pretty clear now, and research shows that quite clearly. And I think it's a difference between the pH on an empty stomach is of, you know, around 2, 2.5 or something, but then when we're having food in there, it actually goes up to pH 4, 4.5. And the bacteria survive much better at pH 4, 4.5 than they do at pH 2.
See, because what I've been doing is I've been taking my VSL. I take two pouches of it, which is just almost a trillion CFUs.
Yeah.
But I take it with 1 to 2 calcium carbonate tablets to suppress any. I actually take the calcium carbonate tablets about 5 to 10 minutes before I take the VSL to suppress the acidity in my stomach. And hope for better survival. Is that a mistake? Should I just be taking it with my last meal?
I've never actually looked at doing it that way, but I think that would achieve the same outcome. The same outcome is you're willing to alkalize the stomach environment before the bacteria get in there so that they've got a better chance of surviving. So they'll survive at, you know, a couple hours at pH 4 far better than 20 minutes at pH 2.
Gotcha.
That's the reality of it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about prebiotics? They've come on the scene. These are fibers, typically digestion-resistant carbohydrates. I remember reading a study a few years ago, I think it was from Australia, where they gave cowboys either a probiotic or a soup made from leeks and onions and artichokes and something else, and then they looked at their feces for excreted probiotic content, and they said that the soup was better than the supplement because it was a prebiotic. It was able to help proliferate more probiotics in the gut and in the lining of the intestines. Is that all prebiotics do? Are they just beneficial for probiotics, or do they in and of themselves have an ability to kind of protect the gut?
Well, those are good questions, really. I think there's the three best sort of prebiotics to date are fruit-oligosaccharides, which you find in leeks and artichokes and angoid artichokes and Jerusalem artichokes and asparagus and onions and garlic, for example. Galacto-oligosaccharides, which typically in a food form come mostly from legumes, but there's also small amounts in a range of other foods like beets as well and onions and onion. And then lactulose, which is what would be called a semi-synthetic prebiotic, and it's not necessarily found anywhere in nature, but it's just a simple sugar that we can't digest. So
okay.
Either way, all three sort of categories of prebiotics have got that capacity to enhance the growth of your own endogenous beneficial bacteria, and I think that's one of their key strengths, and that's something that people often aren't aware of as well, is that your gut ecosystem is completely unique to you. It's sort of like your fingerprint is unique to you. Your gut ecosystem is unique to you. And it's more similar to other people in your family. So your mom and your dad, your siblings will be quite similar to you, relatively speaking, compared to anybody else's. And your gut ecosystem is also fairly resistant to colonization by potential pathogens, but also by probiotic organisms that we take in supplemental form or in fermented foods as well, that we sometimes have this misnomer that we can recolonize or repopulate or reseed our gut with beneficial bacteria, and that's not what occurs in reality. Yes, these probiotics have therapeutic effects while we're taking them, but they don't permanently stick in your gut. And what I think the lovely thing about what prebiotics do is that they encourage the growth of your own native beneficial bacteria, so your Lactobacillus slide and your bifidobacteria.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
I think that's one, the key functions that they do, but they also have therapeutic effects beyond that too. If you look at something like lactulose, for example, yes, it increases the growth of lactobacilli, yes, it increases the growth of bifidobacteria, but it also decreases numbers of endotoxin-carrying bacteria in your gut, and it decreases the absorption of endotoxins as well. So there's an additional benefit, and it speeds up healing of a leaky gut scenario too. So there's a few ticks that it actually has next to its name as well.
And then we have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what synbiotics are, okay? So let's do this. Let's take one. It looks like we've got the phone problem solved here. We're talking with Dr. Jason Harlack. His website is actually, here, give me a second, it is Illuminate, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I think I'm going to say this, is it Illuminate, it's Illuminatum, M-D, M-E-D, wait a minute, I-L-L-U-M-I-N-A.
Yes, Jenna. IlluminateNatMed.com.
IlluminateNatMed, okay, IlluminateNatMed, I was trying to say that all as one word, IlluminateNatMed.com, check it out, we'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio, stay tuned. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
For the best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing, and effective strength training, muscle-building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to BrooksCubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer ebooks, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to BrooksCubic.com right now.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out getds.com.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Jason Harlack. We're talking about, well, we were talking about probiotics and prebiotics. Now we're going to talk about symbiotics. Then we're going to get into the whole issue related to some of these gut disorders today. What are symbiotics, Dr. Harlack?
Well, symbiotics are essentially products that contain both probiotics and prebiotics in one sort of dose. And essentially the combination is supposed to enhance the survival of the probiotic through the upper gut and improve its sort of growth when it actually reaches the colon where it has more of an opportunity to grow. And the prebiotic component is also supposed to stimulate the growth of the sort of endogenous, the native bugs in the gut as well.
So what are some examples of symbiotics? Well, are there any naturally occurring symbiotics out there? I think I know already. So like fermented cabbages, like kimchi, fermented sauerkraut, those kind of things would be symbiotics?
Well, I mean, it's, strictly speaking, probably not. They'd be bordering on it, but I think for a symbiotic to be effective, it really needs to have a specific dose of the prebiotic and a specific dose of the probiotic, so the live bacteria too. So breast milk would probably be the best known, most widely consumed symbiotic that has a specific dose of both prebiotics and probiotic bacteria.
Well then, okay. Yeah, so what about raw unpasteurized milk from grass pastured cows? Would that also have both probiotic and prebiotic qualities to it?
I think both would be too low in terms of the, for a bacteria that have sort of a therapeutic effect, we're usually looking at about 10 to the 9, so a billion CFU per dose, and in unpasteurized milk would be below that from my understanding, and certainly the dose of oligosaccharides in cow's milk is far, far lower than what you find in human milk. Yeah, it's one of those design differences that calves don't need many oligosaccharides compared to humans. So human milk is far higher concentration of that. So that it would be too low concentration of both those agents. Yeah.
So, a symbiotic sounds like something that would have to be created or produced by a company. Are there companies out there who produce a symbiotic type supplement?
There are ones that do symbiotics, and then there are even some yogurts where they add, human research well-characterized probiotic strains, and then they also add some inulin or fructooligosaccharide in a therapeutic dose so that people are getting sort of both when they consume it. So that's sort of like a manufactured symbiotic. And so there's a lot of products in the market that claim to be symbiotics, but not all of them meet that the effectiveness criteria, I'd say, and that if you only put in like a really tiny dose of fructooligosaccharides or inulin, like 100 milligrams or 500 milligrams, you could claim it to be a symbiotic on your label, but it's too low of a dose to actually be expected to have a therapeutic effect. So I think it's being somewhat misleading. So the key thing is actually having a therapeutic dose of the prebiotic alongside a steric dose of the probiotic. And when you start looking at that as a criteria, the ones that are currently sold in the marketplace become far less in terms of meeting those criteria.
Okay, so now let's talk about there's another maybe misunderstanding about the stomach. We talk about the gut like it's this one thing, but really it's you have your intestines and you have your stomach. And I was told recently that the pH in the stomach should be acidic enough to keep any type of microbes from actually living in the stomach. Is that true?
Well, ideally, yeah. So it's the stomach acid, and that's why your stomach acid is actually more acidic on a sort of resting stomach. Because without food in there, it's sort of way to counter any bacteria that you ingest in your food. Because you're constantly ingesting bacteria with every single thing that you eat. And most beverages that we drink too will have some degree of bacteria in there. And our stomach pH is one of its main. Well, it has a few different roles, obviously with digestion as well. But the other aspect is actually, killing bacteria when they first enter there so that they don't have a chance to grow and thrive further down the gut where the pH is more to their liking.
So would this not, okay, so right now the current, for people who suffer from GERD or acid reflux, the assumptions are that the stomach is producing too much acid and hence the proton pump inhibitors are employed or hydrogen inhibitors are employed to lower the acidity of the stomach. Doesn't this make the stomach then prone to more of these pathogens from being able to infest it?
Yes.
So isn't that exactly the opposite of what the doctors should be doing? Isn't that the opposite of what doctors should be doing with their patients who have GERD?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways of approaching GERD from a sort of natural medicine perspective that can be effective. That's certainly the way that they use, most physicians in the conventional medical model use, and that's why it's such a big drug, is just by giving an acid suppressive therapy. And yes, that does relieve the symptoms of heartburn, but it does nothing for any of the deeper causes of heartburn. But importantly, it does increase the risk of a number of conditions, including you're far more likely to get diarrhea type illnesses and food poisoning because your stomach acid is no longer strong enough to actually kill the bacteria that are in the food that you're consuming or the viruses. And you're also far more likely to develop pneumonia as well because if your stomach is colonized by a lot of bacteria, it's far easier for them to get into your lungs because essentially your stomach is supposed to be fairly sterile. There's going to be few small bugs, numbers in there, and mostly a bug like Helicobacter pylori, which has adapted to that environment and can thrive in that sort of low pH environment. But otherwise, it's pretty sterile. But when they start taking those medications, it no longer is sterile. It becomes a living soup of microbes.
Wow. And there's so many people that are on these proton pump inhibitors today. And not only that, but they don't digest and absorb their food as well. I mean, it just seems to me to be a terrible approach. And I know that it gets rid of the symptom. It kind of cuts down on the stomach acid, so this person isn't belching up fire all day long. But it's the wrong approach to dealing with this.
Yeah, it's not an approach that I would advocate in general. I think the occasional person who just gets a one-off episode and the reflux has damaged their esophageal mucosa, and they can take a proton pump inhibitor for like 10 days and break the cycle, and then they can come off it and all's fine. But that's not how they are used in practice. They're often given to people for the rest of their lives, and that's hugely, hugely problematic. Yeah. Well, I think there's lots of consequences to that, and I think there are other ways of addressing GERD that don't involve suppression of gastric acid output as well.
So let's summarize the probiotic-prebiotic discussion before we go into the break, because then I want to tell you my story of silent GERD and what I did, and then we can take it from there, and you can share with my audience some of the approaches, the natural approaches that can be used to kind of heal the gut. So people should be taking their probiotics with a large meal unless they're taking it at night, as I do, with an antacid of some sort, right?
Yeah, that's a novel approach I hadn't thought of before, but that will suffice. Yeah, because you just want to make sure the stomach acid is slightly more alkaline when you're taking that bacterial dose.
Okay. And then incorporating digestion-resistant fibers into the diet will just help the gut kind of populate the beneficial bacteria that's already there. It's not going to necessarily help you seed the gut with new bacteria, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, feeding the gut is a bit of a misnomer, because if you look at the clinical trials in detail, no probiotic drug that you take in a fermented food or in a supplement form permanently colonizes you. If you're in luck, it's a good strain and will stick around for a week or two, and every day it gets less and less and less. And that's really got to do with the capacity of your own ecosystem to resist invaders. Even if there are beneficial invaders, they're still invaders from that perspective. And also that uniqueness of your actual own ecosystem, I think, plays a role there too. But research clearly shows that when you take a probiotic supplement or be sauerkraut or something, those bacteria do not permanently stick. So I think it creates a bit of we have to change our thinking with this, and we really need to, if we want to encourage a healthier gut, we have to choose prebiotics and prebiotic-like foods that encourage your own unique beneficial bacteria populations to grow. So I think that in over the coming years, there will be a greater use of prebiotics for actually doing what we want it to do. Because probiotics don't do what people often think they're doing in terms of refeeding or recolonizing.
Yeah, I always thought that's what I always thought they did. I always thought they did that. I said, too bad you couldn't kill all of the bacteria in your gut like you kill your lawn and then reseed it. But that's not obviously something you'd want to do. So let's do this.
No, it's definitely not. And certainly there are still people who take that approach. But I think, as I said, if you look at the research, realize that no, actually, that's not what happens in reality. That yes, they've got saving effects. But if you really need to help the survivors, they're in low amounts, grow into a healthier population. So we should be focusing on nurturing and nourishing the beneficial bugs in our gut through our foods that we choose to eat, and also through prebiotics as supplements.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking more about gut health. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Jason Harlack. We shall return.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get two bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic, raw, EVOO, for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935. Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to primal-d.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended it.
Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date. Now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heightened anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
New from the makers of MassPro Synthogen, Progenidrex. It's finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use superhuman curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need metacurcumin. Human by Rev Genetics today.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Okay. We're talking with Dr. Jason Harlack. We're talking about gut issues, and we're going to plug his website again. It's Illuminate Nat Med, IlluminateNATMED.com, to learn more about him and what's going on with him, if he has any upcoming lectures. If you live on that side of the world, he is at the University of Tasmania School of Medicine. About 6 or 7 months ago, Dr. Harlack, I started to notice this sour taste in my mouth, and it got stronger and stronger as each month passed, to the point that it made me hypersalivate. I was constantly swallowing. When I would talk to people, I would almost spit. My mouth was constantly watered up, and it tasted like after you vomit, the sour taste you have in your mouth. I spoke to my primary care physician, and he said, it sounds to me like you have GERD. I says, no, I don't have GERD. I have no heartburn at all. Nothing. I don't belch a lot. That's not true. I was belching a lot. In the morning, I was waking up and belching on an empty stomach. But I said, I didn't have heartburn. I had nothing coming up, nothing burning my throat, no regurgitation or anything like that. And so he suggested I try an over-the-counter product called Prevacid, which I tried one day, and it made it worse. So then I started doing some digging, okay. and I found out that there is something called silent GERD, which all you experience is this sour taste, which is some of the stomach acids getting up into the throat. I immediately, and I'm going to go fast with this because I want your opinion on this. I immediately eliminated grains, coffee, and alcohol from my diet completely. Cold turkey, boom, I was done with them. I also had a sinus problem that now I think was caused by the silent GERD in retrospect, but I was using lots and lots of oxymedicone, which is medicazone, which is Afrin, which I read that when it drips down into the back of your throat, it actually could feed bad bacteria in your stomach. So I eliminated that, and then I started taking large doses, 25 grams of L-glutamine first thing in the morning and right before bed. My probiotics, as I explained, with my antacid, a small one tablet Tums antacid to change the pH of my gut before taking it, and started taking lots of DGL, deglycerinized licorice. I can tell you now that for the first time this week, I do not have that taste in my mouth any longer.
Oh, that's great.
So what have I done right that has changed my prognosis?
Well, you probably got a few things right. I mean, certainly from my perspective, I usually get people to cut out alcohol and coffee. Alcohol tends to make that lower esophageal sphincter, whose job is to prevent the gastric acid from coming up into the esophagus. Alcohol makes that sphincter not work as well. Yeah, so it means that the content gets up more. And looking at the research on GORD, even in the conventional medical system, the main cause of GORD is seen to be that sphincter isn't working properly.
Right.
Yeah, so that it's not nothing to do with too much stomach acid, it's got to do with that sphincter not working. and the next thing they use doesn't address that particular scenario. It doesn't make that sphincter work any better. But you can exacerbate, there's certain foods that you can cut out that actually make that sphincter not work as well, and alcohol and coffee would be two of those. So, yeah, that makes total sense. And I also think that taking something like glutamine or the licorice extract does promote healing and decrease inflammation of that area too,
I feel that way.
Imagine what we're doing.
My stomach became distended over the past couple of months. I always felt like my viscera was inflamed, not because it was painful, but because it was displaced, and it's actually got, my stomach is almost flat again now from taking the DGL, and
okay.
I'm taking therapeutic doses of DGL, and interestingly enough, I'm not taking it the way they tell you to take it. I'm not taking it before a meal. I'm taking it on empty stomach, so that and I'm taking 5 or 6 tablets at a time on an empty stomach, because the DGL does not raise blood pressure. It has the glycerothinic acid removed, so you don't have to worry about any of the negative effects of it. But I'm taking enough where I want to reestablish that mucosal lining in my stomach and in my gut between the glutamine and this, which I take on empty stomach in between my meals. I'm not taking it with my meals, interestingly enough.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense, too, because we know that when the esophageal mucosa is inflamed, so after some damage, like acid goes on there for a while before it becomes inflamed, and once it's inflamed, it makes that sphincter work less as well. So you get this sort of vicious cycle of as it gets more inflamed, the sphincter works becomes less competent, and then you get more acid going out, causing more sort of inflammation. So if you can break that cycle with the sort of natural anti-inflammatories like you've just done, it means that sphincter can start working better as well. So I think you've hit it by a couple different pathways to create the benefit that you've seen.
There's one more pathway that I used. I started to jog purposefully in an up and down motion to jar my viscera more. I started to jump rope purposefully to jar my viscera. And I, every evening I get on my inversion table. And when I get my body in completely inverted and I feel that stretch in my thoracic region, I take my fingers and I dig them underneath my, gently, nothing terrible, but I take my fingers and where I assume my stomach is, and I push towards my waistline while I'm upside down. I want to pull the hiatal hernia is when that portion of the stomach starts to protrude up. I want to pull it back down. So I'm actually drinking water and jumping rope, and I'm drinking water and jogging. I want that up and down motion to jar and pull my stomach back down again. Do you think that's just insanity?
No, I've heard that before, actually, and I've heard people getting good results with that. And I certainly spoke to a number of chiropractors who one of them, they can actually manipulate that, the hiatus hernia back down, and that's part of their approach. And for people with GORD, where the hiatal hernia is the key cause in that situation, and that can fix it quite well. So I like that approach, yeah.
Now, let me share one other thing with you, an observation. I have pondered for a very, very long time why our world is suffering from obstructive sleep apnea. My snoring has gotten lessened since I started this journey to heal my gut. And so I started to think, if the things that I do to my gut could cause the flesh to protrude up and overgrow and cause inflammation in my esophagus and in my throat and up, then why couldn't it be also swelling the tissue in my soft palate and making me snore?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I haven't read anything on that, but I think it makes sense. And I think you're right, given that the how common actually GERD actually is in the population, that could be a factor involved with that. Interesting thought.
You know, since the early 1920s, there have been individuals here in the United States, most notably Bernard McFadden, who was the father of physical culture for the United States, who said that they had no cereal diets, because they observed then when people ate lots of grains, they developed GI issues. And I have to say that anybody who has any type of belching, unexplained belching on an empty stomach, lots of flatulence, you really need to think about taking grains, coffee, and alcohol completely out of your diet, even for a couple weeks. The changes in my stomach and the taste were dramatic within just a couple days. It was profound, and I knew I was on the right track. And now, if the worst it was a 10, it's a 1 now. The occasions that I still have that taste come up, but the norm now is that I don't have it any longer. So, So anyway,
it's very, very good outcome. Yeah.
I want to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, I want you to talk to the audience and kind of summarize what people should be doing to ensure a healthy gut, even if they are asymptomatic. I think that most people, like myself, didn't really ever think that I had anything wrong with me, because there were really no overt symptoms, but there was something going on in my gut. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, LivonLabs.com.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Jason Harlack. His website is illuminatemed.com. Learn more about him. So the bottom line is that probiotics are beneficial. Should everybody be taking them just as a prophylactic? I mean, even if you don't have any gut issues?
Well, I'll probably give a somewhat controversial answer here and say no. I actually think it's more important to take prebiotics or prebiotic-like foods daily than I do a probiotic for people who are generally very healthy. I think that probiotics have got specific applications that they're amazingly useful for, and there's certainly a number of my patients with ulcerative colitis, for example, or irritable bowel syndrome, who are on a specific probiotic long-term to help deal with that particular condition that they've got. But I think really we should be focusing on encouraging and making your own gut ecosystem as healthy as possible, and prebiotics and prebiotic-like foods are far more capable of doing that than taking probiotics in a bottle or even fermented foods. You'll get better results in terms of changing your ecosystem for the better if you take prebiotics and or prebiotic-like foods.
What kind of prebiotic foods do you eat, Dr. Harlack?
Well, I think there's a few categories of prebiotic-like or prebiotic foods. So one is foods that are rich in polyphenols. So those dark and brightly colored compounds we found in nature, natural foods. So, the skin of nuts, for example, or blueberries or black currants or red currants, flax seeds, hazelnuts, purple potatoes, purple carrots, those sort of polyphenol compounds actually work to enhance the growth of both bifidobacteria and lactobacilli and change your gut ecosystem for the better. And there's some specific foods that I would take daily that clinical trials show increase the number of good bugs in the gut. And these can be simple foods. Even eating, one-third of a cup per day of almonds actually increases the growth of your own lactobacilli and bifidobacteria.
Really?
Eating two red-skinned apples a day increases the growth of bifidobacteria. Eating black currants or wild blueberries also increase bifidobacteria and lactobacilli. And also things like cacao powder and green tea also increase the beneficial bug count dramatically, and green tea also decreases numbers of potential pathogens in your gut. So I think those foods are that we should focus on daily to make sure we've got those brightly colored fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains. Like I eat a lot of that, the black rice or the red rice, for example, to get those polyphenols from that food component as well. But then I take a green tea supplement daily too, and in terms of green tea, amounts that are required to make the beneficial changes in your gut ecosystem, you're looking at the equivalent of 5 to 6 cups per day of the tea, which is a fair whack for people that aren't sort of, you know, Japanese or Chinese sort of ancestry. It's not part of their culture. But you can take a green tea supplement that contains about 300 milligrams of catechins, and that's a dose that's been found to cause significant beneficial shifts in your gut ecosystem.
Huh.
So those are the foods that I focus on people having daily, as well as foods that are rich in fruit, the oligosaccharides, so things like asparagus, and in season, Jerusalem artichokes and yacon tubers, and then onions and garlic on a daily basis as well. So you're getting a food, and foods high in resistant starch too. So, you know, bananas, for people that tolerate it well, legumes for, you know, roasted and cooled potatoes, for example, are ways of getting that resistant starch intake.
Yeah. Yeah, we learned that one in our household too. You make your potatoes, put them in the refrigerator overnight, and then eat them the next day, because then the amylose turns into amylopectin instead. So
that's right, and that way you're getting a food source for you, but it's also feeding your colonic bacteria. So you're like Roseburia, your eubacterium, your Romanococci will thrive on that sort of resistant starch, which I think is.
What about the popular, you know, fermented sauerkraut and kimchi that everybody is eating now because they believe it's a prebiotic? Is it in fact a prebiotic, and is that a good choice?
Well, I don't think it would meet that strict definition of prebiotic. And listen, I'm Ukrainian, and German too, and both sides of my family have been making sauerkraut for many generations. So, and I've been recommending sauerkraut and teaching people to make it since 2000, so well before the fad of it. And I'm a huge fan of it, but I think we just have to be clear what it does. There's lots of benefits to having fermented foods daily, including just taste benefit as well. But it's not actually feeding your beneficial bugs up in the way that these polyphenols do, or in the way that fruit oligosaccharide-rich foods do, or galacto-oligosaccharide-rich foods, or resistant starch-rich foods. They enhance the growth of your own native bacteria. I think that's the key thing. And certainly ingesting fermented foods or taking probiotic supplements can help cause some beneficial shifts in the ecosystem, but not as substantial as what you get when you're using prebiotic-like substances.
Really, and, you know, and this is such an exciting area of science right now. The microbiome of the body, and as you pointed out before, it's unique for everybody. Everybody's is different than somebody else's because of their journey. Were they C-section babies? Were they breastfed? I mean, all these things play a role.
Yeah.
In the seeding, so to speak. And I really believe that this area of science holds a lot of promise for understanding how we get some of the diseases we get, but more importantly, how to reverse some of these diseases. My little journey in Silent GERD really opened my eyes to things that could be going on that you have no idea going on until they get so bad that maybe you can't turn it back that easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think you caught yours relatively quickly, really. Some people would have waited a lot longer and eventually would have had far more, they would have started getting GERD symptoms, and they would have far more inflammation in the esophagus, and that takes a bit longer to turn that back.
Yeah.
So I think you're lucky that you're in tune with your body and you're aware of these things, and then the sooner you're onto it again, can change things around, obviously the sooner you're going to benefit from it.
Yeah. Listen, I want to thank you again for staying up all night or getting up so early to be on the air with us, because this is really an intriguing discussion. And please keep in touch with Elisa if you have anything new coming out. We would love to have you back on the show, okay?
Okay, brilliant. Thank you for that. And thanks for having me as well. It's been great.
Thank you. Everybody, you can go to Illuminate Nat Med for natural medicine, illuminatenatmed.com to learn more about Dr. Jason Harlack. He's got some great stuff there. He probably has some lectures. Those of you who live on that side of the globe and listen to the show, you can probably participate in some of the events that he has planned. Also want to thank Dr. Jonathan Bonnet for coming on during the first hour to talk about the role of primary care practitioners, in helping children and their families understand what needs to be done to keep children from becoming obese in the first place and obviously developing diseases. It's only Monday. It's the beginning of the week. We have lots of great shows for you the rest of the week. I hope you tune in. This is the holiday season. We're all enjoying ourselves, but we can all stay healthy at the same time. I won't be eating any grains, drinking any booze, or drinking any coffee this holiday season. And those are three things I look very, very much forward to during the holiday. So, but we can still have a good time. All right, so we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening today, and thank you for listening always. See you tomorrow.